Okay, let's begin. And just a word or two of introduction before we begin the actual shiur. I hope everyone has a chumash. If I could get one, I'd appreciate it. Yours. Basically, the theme, or the, I should say the theme, the standard method that I would like to use is for the shurim, is for people to have chumashim. We will provide these. Anything other than chumash and rashi, if I consider it essential, I will include it on a source sheet. Those of you who've been to my shurim the last 2 years know that, with very few exceptions, I very much like to focus on text and studying text inside. This way you don't have to take my word for it. You can learn it inside. You can question. We can really learn and study together. There's more seats up front. There's room and seats up front. If we could just keep the aisle closed, open, excuse me. Dr. Felsenthal, we can just move in a little bit so we can keep the aisle open so that people can come in. That way there's room and there are chairs. So the Chumash and Rashi will not be on the source sheets, because hopefully everyone will have a Chumash and Rashi in front of them, and that's a particularly important introduction today, because the entire shiur today is going to be about one Rashi, which is not on your sheet. So Ikra Chaser Min HaSefer, or Min HaDaf, but it is the Sefer, and that is, of course, we'll all have Chumashim and Rashis with us. My goal for this, as best as I can articulate it, is what was included in the flyer or the blurbs in the bulletin, and that is to really study Bereishis together in a very in-depth way, and in a way that I think most of us have never done. Because the times that we learned it, whether they were in elementary school, most men have not opened up a Bereishis seriously since elementary school. Some girls have, and even that, it's very often at early high school, or late elementary school, or early high school, maybe a seminary year, probably not. They do Navi more. And even if we take it seriously on a week-to-week basis, a week is not enough to do any parsha, let alone the parsha of Bereishis. What we're doing is parsha. What I do, frankly, when I give a sermon, we're not studying Chumash together. I hope I'm giving a good sermon. I hope I'm giving a nice idea. But it's an idea. Some of the ideas are more Pshat-oriented. Some of the ideas are more Hasidic or Drushy. But it's still an idea. We're not studying it as a book straight, as a story to understand thematically, hashkafically, etc., what the Torah is trying to teach us. We're not using nearly the intellectual seriousness with which we bring to Torah Sheba'al Peh, to Gemara, or even to Halacha, when we study Chumash. Most of us aren't, and I include myself. Part of the reason why I chose this year was because it was something that I felt was lacking in my life, that I wanted to do, and at my current professional stage, if I'm not teaching it, I'm not learning it. I just don't have time to do alternative free learning. So part of the reason I chose this year, I'm glad that other people were interested besides me, because really this was part of an interest that I had. Especially as we go on and we get into the narratives, the stories, and the development of the characters, so there will be a heavy emphasis on that. Obviously, the first few months of our shiurim are going to be about the creation story. We could spend a whole year on the creation story. We won't spend a whole year, but we may spend a few months. And that is not a story with characters in a way that you would say the rest of Bereishis or even Shmos is. But trust me, there's plenty to learn. We will be focusing, when relevant, on topics, if you will, outside the text, such as philosophical issues that are raised. So in the whole Bereishis story, I haven't decided at what point we'll do it, but we will, at least for 1 week, if not more, venture a little bit into the deep waters of evolution, creationism. It was in the news this week, if you heard what happened yesterday in Kansas. The Big Bang, where do these things fit in with Judaism? Some of you may know that this has been a little bit of a tumult in the Jewish world the last year or two. So we will take a little bit, at least into the shallow waters. I don't know if we'll get to the deep waters. I don't know if those are so safe anymore. But at least into the shallow waters, we'll discuss that. Issues of original sin. The story, of course, with Chava and Eitz Hadas, how does that relate? Issues of Tzadik V'Ra'lo, evil in the world, punishment, all these types of topics, when they're relevant, when they emerge naturally from the text, we will take time to study those, even if those studies take us a little bit beyond the text. So that's by way of introduction. As I say, that's all I can tell you now, and it's really just reviewing what I had put on the flyer, and I don't know more, because as I said, this is actually an ongoing experiment for me. When I've taught Gemara or Halacha, things I've done many times and spent years of my life learning, I know exactly where I'm going and how I'm going to get there. And I myself needed to brush up on my Parsha B'Chsav. Someone once told me, I'm a reverse Karaite. I said, I know, but I have thousands of yeshiva guys who are with me. We're more popular than the original Karaites. So, but it's all, of course, it's a mistake. It's no excuse for a man or a woman not to be fully lettered in our day and age with the opportunities that we have to learn Chumash. So, That's my plan, and I'm glad you've joined me tonight, and I hope you'll continue to join me. Please note through the bulletin, or perhaps our email list, when there will be shiurim that aren't given. For example, most of you know that the shul mission is in 2 weeks, so we're not going to have a shiur that week because I'll be in Eretz Yisrael. Those notifications will be in the bulletin and through email, and of course they'll be announced here. But in case you miss a shiur and you want to know about the schedule, just check the bulletin. And finally, assuming that this is working, every one of these shiurim will be recorded digitally and probably as soon as tomorrow morning posted on the Shomrei website. So if you miss a shiur or want to review a shiur, if you go to shomreimuna.us, you should be able to easily find and access the shiurim. Okay? All right. Let's begin. The title of today's shiur is Why Begin in the Beginning? Which is another way of asking, come on in, there's room. Yes, there's room, just don't sit by the door. If anyone sits by the door, then they won't be able to get in.
Rabbi,
you
should put some chairs up.
Yeah, there's plenty of room. I will move back. Bring in the chairs. The title of the shiur, Why Begin in the Beginning, is essentially a question about why the Chumash begins, why Bereishis begins, the way it begins. So if everyone could open up their Chumash, although, in all honesty, I think at least the Pasuk itself you all know by heart. This is one Pasuk I think we all know. Let's read it together. The Pasuk, and of course, importantly for us, the entire Torah HaKadosha begins with the following. Bereishis bara Elokim, Eis HaShamayim, Ve'Eis Aretz. In the beginning, God created the Shamayim, the heavens, Ve'Eis Aretz, and the land, or the earth. Now, perhaps, Ethan, if you could bring chairs up front. I'll move you. There's plenty of room up front. Before we get into the actual creation story, one thing we already know. We already know from the opening pasuk, and we know from, of course, all of our familiarity with the text, that the opening of the Torah is the opening of the history of the world. The Torah is... God chose to begin the Torah with the creation of the world. Now, most of us, since we've known about this, since we were... maybe before we were six, and certainly since we were six or seven, on some level, so we may take this for granted. Why wouldn't you begin in the beginning? That's what God done. In the beginning, God created heaven and the earth. Everyone knows that. We know it in English, you know it in Hebrew. We all know this. And yet, perhaps in the most famous comment that Rashi ever makes, anywhere, certainly in the entire Torah, that very reality, the basis for that is questioned. If you look, look please at the first Rashi. The Torah telling us again, starting with the creation of the world. Rashi quotes the following: "Amar Rabbi Yitzchak." And the first thing we'll do when we finish the Rashi is try to know and try to identify who is this Rabbi Yitzchak. But Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Lo haYitzarech lahatchil es haTorah el mehachodesh hazeh lachem. The Torah shouldn't have began here. What do we need to know about this? Who cares? So you think maybe he meant, oh yeah, just wait till Avram comes. No, who cares about that? Oh, he must mean until Moshe comes. Who cares about that? Says Rabbi Yitzchak, we don't need to know any of these stories. Or so it would seem. I don't want to put too much into his words. Why does the Torah start with this? It should have started from the mitzvah of HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, which is the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh, sanctifying the new moon. Now just parenthetically, the question is asked why that was picked. Rashi, if you continue, says, Shehi mitzvah rishona shenistavu b'Yisrael. It's the first mitzvah. Now the truth is that you all probably know that it's not exactly the first mitzvah in the Torah. What comes first? Mila, which is this week. Circumcision is this Shabbos. Lech lecha. What came before even that? Having children. And there's a third one before it. Kiddush HaChodesh, very good, with Yaakov fighting. Well, I guess if we get to it, we'll learn if it was an angel who he was fighting with. That'll be part of the shiur. See, that's a topic. So the question is, who are these mitzvot commanded on? So what most mafarshim seem to point out is that you have to read this Rashi carefully. Shestavu ba Yisrael. Namely, as Jews, as a people. A mitzvah tziburit, as we'll see one of the mafarshim call it. For the Jews, because Mila, again, those mitzvot, all of which were commanded to the Jewish people before there was a Jewish people. But we are obligated in all three of those. It wasn't given to the Jewish people. Kiddush HaChodesh is the first mitzvah given to the Jewish people. Says Rabbi Yitzchak, that's where the Torah should have began. Now I want you to start thinking, we'll get to it, but since we're going to get to it, you can already start thinking about it now. What is the assumption of this question in terms of what the role of Torah should be? Just keep that in the back of your mind. So he continues, Uma'atam pasal b'bereishis. So if that's the case, why did in fact the Torah begin in the beginning? So now Rashi answers, Mishim koach ma'asav higid la'amo. That is a quote, L'teit le'am nachlas koyim. This is a paraphrase or a quote from a pasuk in Tehillim. The idea that sometimes we want to know certain things, we're told certain things, so we can know about the greatness and the awesomeness of the might of Hashem. Namely, in this specific point, so we're learning about the creation of the world. You see how powerful God is, because look, He created the whole world. Now, what does that do for us? Shim yomru umos olam Yisrael. Humbly, we've jumped. I mean, we jumped from cosmology, creation, to what'll happen. And it's almost laughable now when you think maybe it would happen. Maybe this minute. When's the last time it happened, right? You did like a Google count. How many times this has been accused to the Jewish people? I think you'd still be looking up the hits. Who said that the Jewish people should have Eretz Yisrael? The Goyim are going to say, you stole it. Who told you it's yours? They'll accuse us, listim atem. You're robbers, thieves, bandits. Shkavashtem artzos shiva Goyim. After all, your Torah itself says, there were people living there. You drove them out. Conquerors. Thugs. Who told you it's your land? So what will we respond? We'll respond, Heim omrim lahem kol ha'aretz shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ah, you're making a mistake. Please come on in. The whole land is the Ribbono Shel Olam's. Hu bara hu nasna la'asher yosher be'enav. If God is the creator of the world, that means He is the owner, so to speak, or the master of the world. And if that's the case, He can give... Right here, right here, the chair. No one wants to sit in the front, I know. It doesn't matter where I'm giving a shiur, men, women, in the shul, in the yeshiva, it doesn't matter where. The last seats to fill are always the ones in front. I'm beginning to take it personally. All right. But then I felt better because I asked other teachers and they told me it's the same thing in their class. So people are still thinking they're in second grade and they're going to get called on. Okay. Therefore, if that's the case, God can give and God can take. Birtzono natna lahem. When He wanted, He gave the land of Israel to the seven nations. Birtzono natna lahem, but natna lanu. And it was His will to take it from them and give it to us. So why do we need the entire Sefer Bereishis and the first part of Sefer Shmos until we get to the actual Pasuk of HaKadosh Zelechem, that first mitzvah, says Rashi, in the name of this Rebbe Yitzchak, in order that we should know that if God created the world, that means He is the master and the owner of the world, and therefore, Eretz Yisrael is rightfully ours. Now before I get into what is the question, how do we understand the question, and most importantly, of course, what's the answer? And how does that apply and how does that affect us? The first thing we want to just clear up is a little history, a little biography. Who are we talking about? Who is this Rav Yitzchak? Anyone have any guesses? So some say Rashi's father. Anyone else? Any other suggestions? Rebbe? Anyone else? Who? If you didn't say it was his father, when do you think he lived? Who was this person? Presumably before Rashi, but maybe contemporary events, who knows? So the truth is, this is very mysterious. The reason that who Rabbi Yitzchak is mysterious is because we don't know where this comes from. In other words, in this printed stone chumash, very nice, I don't know, other people have some other chumashim here, you tell me what yours says. But in the standard printing of Rashi, you will have noticed, as I read, in two different places, there are parentheses and sources given. One quoted a medrash in the Tanchuma, and in the end there was a Bereishis Rabbah. Two different rabbinic medrashim. Again, that comes from the period of Chazal, the Mishnaic period. There's two different sources. Now we have that as one seamless whole in Rashi. So the implication from this would be that Rashi is not quoting his father. Rashi is quoting one of the rabbis from the time of Chazal, from the time of the Mishnah, one of the Chazal. There were people named Rabbi Yitzchak in the time of Chazal. However, there's always been this mystery. Why? So a number of Mepharshim pointed out, but if you look at the first source on your sheet, I quoted a Chumash Sefer called the Divrei David. The Divrei David is a Chumash Sefer that is written by an author who's more well known for his halachic works. Getting back to my introduction. Even we see from him that you should do both, Tar Shabbat Slam and Tar Shabbat Peh. This is Rav David Halevi, who wrote the commentary on Shulchan Aruch known as the Taz, which is an acronym for Turei Zav. Very, very important commentary on certain chapters in Shulchan Aruch. But he also wrote a Sefer on Chumash, but to be more precise, he didn't write this Sefer on Chumash. This is what's known as a supra commentary, namely a commentary on a commentary. There is an entire industry of Sfarim, going back probably till around his lifetime, but certainly once he died, of Sfarim that were written, not per se directly on the Torah, they were written on Rashi's commentary on the Torah. You could fill up a few bookshelves. Just was Sfarim written on Rashi on the Torah. And one of them is this Taz, this Divrei David, by Rav David Halevi. So what does he say? Re'iti k'tav echad yoshon. I've seen this very old explanation, Biur Rashi, that explains Rashi. Kosovo, Shazeh, Hamaimar, B'Shem, Rabbi Yitzchak, Shemaybi Rashi. Who was it that Rashi was quoting? What's going on here? After all, Anyo Muzkar, B'Shem, Medrash, Talmud. There's no earlier source for this Medrash. Rashi made it up. Where did it come from? Rather, what must it be? What Gene said. El Shazeh, Rabbi Yitzchak, Oviv Shel Rashi. Right? What does Rashi stand for? Rashi is an acronym. Shlomo Yitzchaki. I mean, his, whatever else you know or don't know, you know that his father's name was Yitzchak. That's for sure. So it says the Taz and others, this must be his father. He's quoting his father. But now is the really sensitive part. Look what he continues. Aloha Yalamdin Godol. Rashi's father wasn't such a knacker. Simple Jew. Wonderful Jew. Raised a good son, Mustama. Shat a little machas. But he wasn't such a great scholar. For Rashi writes a lechabid aviv. Rashi, as he begins his monumental work, wanted to honor his father. Ulhaskiro betchilas chiburo. And to mention him right at the beginning, at the outset, to show his love of his father. Ramarlo, and he said to his father, Shol eza kushya. Ask me a question. Vechtavena al shimcha. And I'll include it in my parish under your name. That's a delicate way of putting things. However, it's worth noting, even though some do accept this, the Taz himself rejects it. V'zu eino. Now, what's interesting is that it's not clear that he's necessarily rejecting that the Rav Yitzchak here is the father. He rejects the pejorative connotation. That Rashi's father wasn't some knacker and he was just trying to help him out. Because after all, he points out, I'm not going to read it inside, but this is the continuation here, that there's at least one place that we know about is Shas, on the Gemara, where Rashi quotes his father and he uses an honorarium as he an honorific title as he describes him. If that's the case, Muchach Shahay Baal Torah, says the Taz. But that doesn't change the fact that it might really be him that he's being quoted. Maybe this is the Yitzchak who was Rashi's father. Now, the reason to doubt that is because the basic assumption that it began with is simply not true. It's not true that there are no earlier sources of this idea. What is true, you'll see in a moment, I'll prove it to you, I'll show you it before your very eyes, the actual text, the way it's in Rashi, existing in that way, with those words, and that question, and that name, Rabbi Yitzchak, that package exists nowhere else. That's true. The question is it because Rashi just got it from his father? Or because there was some other Rabbi Yitzchak who has no relation to him, who may have died well before Rashi ever was born, and as sometimes happens, as later people quote earlier sources, they paraphrase. But there are at least three earlier sources that in one form or another essentially ask the same question. The most likely source for Rashi, assuming that the Yitzchak is not his father, but some previous rabbi, is the second source on your sheet. Because of the Midrashim that do exist about this idea, it's the only one that asks this question or makes this point in the name of Rabbi Yitzchak. But it's a much shorter, more succinct one, and there's at least one important phrase that is not in the Medrash that is in Rashi. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak is in the Yalkut Shimoni, one of the Medrashim that we have, on Parshas Bo of all places. Not on Parshas Gracious. Lo ha-yitzarach l'hatchilat Torah, l'me'achodesh z'alachem. Should have started with that pasuk. V'lo me'hitchem v'bereshus, so why did it in fact start with the creation story? V'shem koach ma'asav hikid la'amo l'aseis l'hem nachalas goyim. Same question. What's the answer? So the Jewish people will know that Hashem is in charge, and therefore Israel is rightfully theirs. It took only 1.5 lines, not the 6 or 7 lines it takes in Rashi. And it's the name of Rabbi Yitzchak. Very likely that this is the primary source. Rashi was just paraphrasing and more than that, expanding on, embellishing this basic medrash. It's worth knowing, I won't read it inside, but just if you want to take a look, the next 2 sources on your sheet are the 2 other places that I know of in Chazal. One is a medrash on our pasuk in Bereishis Rabbah, and one is a medrash on the Megillah Shir HaShirim, in which similar questions, if not answers, are asked, but none of the language is exactly like Rashi, and most importantly, none of those identify the scholar as posing the question or giving the answer as Rabbi Yitzchak. So the second source is Rabbi Yeshua, the Saknin, B'shem Rabbi Levi, and the third source is Rabbi Yanai. Yes?
The question seems to be the same in both first and second sources. The answer should be. The first answer is that the Rabbi should know that it's your language because God knows it. The second one is Yalkut Shimoni says that the Bnei Yisrael should recognize that it belongs to God.
Where do you say that it should be Bnei Yisrael in the second one?
It says Bnei Yisrael.
No, that la'amo was in. Yeah, that la'amo was from. That la'amo is the end of the pasuk from Tehillim. But your point is well taken, but we're going to save that for a little bit later in the shiur. But I would say at this point, the simple understanding of Rashi or whoever he was quoting, the earlier Midrashim, is this way, you know, will be the disputation in Baltimore one day. And the Goyim are going to come and say, oh, you can't have Israel. And we're going to show up with our Bible and throw it down, gently, of course, on the table and say, no, you see that God created the world and you all acknowledge that we're the chosen people and therefore God gave us the land and he was allowed to do it because he gave it to the other people, the seven nations. This is our ticket for legitimacy in the eyes of the world. That seems to be the understanding of Rashi. Now, you might have certain questions on that. Keep those in mind. But before we ask questions, we need to understand. That does seem to be the simple understanding of Rashi. Now, that's in terms of his conclusion. But I want to now, assuming that it was his father and it wasn't his father, I think it's an interesting point, but it's not the main point of tonight's shiur. The main point of tonight's shiur is to understand what does this Rashi, whether his earlier source is his father or his midrashim. It's certainly significant to us that Rashi, who does not have an introduction to anybody, he chose, this is what we really need to realize, whatever the earlier sources, there are millions of midrashim, they don't make it onto the front page. Rashi is the one who gave his stamp of this is a really important concept, because Rashi is the one who chose to make this the first comment that he would cite in his legendary commentary on the Torah. And therefore it behooves us, again, since I assume almost if not all of us already have heard this and seen this inside, or certainly heard it outside, but I don't know if we've ever really thought about it. It's a question, what is really going on in this idea of Rashi, whoever it stems from? So I want to share with you, we'll divide up the rest of the shiur into two phases, the rest of the sources on the sheet. First, a number of different suggestions made by later Mefarshim as to what is the premise of the question. Remember, I told you as we were reading Rashi, think about that. What's the assumption that motivates the question? And once we can know the answer to that, then we can try to better understand what's the deeper message behind the answer that Rashi gives. In other words, if you have a question, it's based on an assumption, so the likelihood is that the answer somehow rejects or alters that assumption. So we need to first do step A before we can do step B. So the truth is that what I always assumed, personally, as I read Rashi over the years, was his assumption is something that at least two Mefarshim that I know of say explicitly, and I put one of them down on the sheet here for you. I mentioned the concept of what's known as a supra commentary, a commentary on a commentary. Right? You have also some Mefarshim on the Rambam. Those are known as supra commentaries on the Rambam. So perhaps the most well known or the most simple, not necessarily the most important, but at least if you have a standard Mikraos Gedolos, many of them include what's known as the Sifsei Chachamim. The Sifsei Chachamim very often fills in gaps. If Rashi will ask a question or make a point, he'll tell you where it's coming from, what the assumption is. He'll give some life, a little teeth to Rashi. So if you look in the Mikros Gedolos, you'll see the Sifsei Chaim, and I put the two lines here of it on the sheet for you. He fleshes out, what's Rashi's question? When Rashi says the Torah should have began beginning in the middle of Sefer Shmos with the first mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh, what was Rashi really asking? Says the Sifsei Chachamim the following. You see, everyone have it? This fifth source on your sheet. Sifsei Chaim. Taha HaTorah lo nitna liYisrael ela b'shvil haMitzvos haKetuvim bo sheyakayim osam. What's the point of Torah, says Sifsei Chachamim. What did Rashi have in mind? Rashi had in mind is that the point of Torah is not fancy philosophy, and it's not a history book, and it's certainly not a story book for children. What's the purpose of Torah? To teach us mitzvos. To give us a guidebook. What do we do and what do we not do? How do we live our life? Mitzvos. That's the point of Torah. If that's the case, and he says, and that's the lashon of Torah. Torah means to teach. To do. Actions. That's what the word Torah implies, he says. Im kein. Second line. Kol hani sipurei dvarim. All these stories. That are not needed in the Torah. He says something very interesting. Not in Rashi, but it's interesting the way he adds it. It's not that we wouldn't want to know these. We're Jews. We want to know our history. So what should have happened? Laso sefer b'fnei atzmo. Kmo sefer Yoshua v'sefer shoftim. No. We'll have a book called Sefer Avos. And it'll tell us all the stories. It's like Yoshua tells us those stories, and Shoftim tells us those stories, and Malachim, and Daniel, and we have stories. We want to know stories. There's no mitzvos in Nevi'im or Ksuvim, but we want to know the stories that are important. So these are nice, important stories. But that's not the Torah. The Torah is for mitzvos. To know how to live a life. If that's the case, what do we need all these stories for? Go put them in another book. Right, cut and paste on computers. You can do it now. Cut and paste. Right, it'll be quicker. Right, we wouldn't have to have those double parshios. We could easily finish in 1 year. It wouldn't be no problem. Have a separate book called Sefer Avos. Why are they in the Torah? That's what Rashi was asking. And they were not going to give it. We have no answer now. But that's one understanding of, and the truth is, I have to say, I once, even years ago, when in New York, I once gave a drasha in a shul, I just assumed that that was a question of Rashi. Now we'll have to see what the answer therefore is. But that, I thought that was the assumption of the question, that the purpose of Torah is mitzvos, don't hack me a chanuk with stories, with philosophy, with hashkafas, with musr, that's all fine, it's good for your parsha stories, and it's good for your Torah at the table, but that's not in the Torah. The Torah is tachlis, it's red meat. It's about doing mitzvos. And how come, therefore, this is in there? Yes, Harry?
But we do have a principle of Maitre Avos Siman Tovim.
Who gave us that principle? I don't know how early that was.
Well, anyway, but I mean,
so that could be from Navi. We don't need that in the Chumash. We don't need it in the Chumash.
I'll say, but Maitre Avos Siman Tovim, under that concept,
yeah,
the stories of the Avos are not just stories. They're actually designed to instruct us in a way to live. They don't carry throughout the level of mitzvahs, but
so this is all. So this is what you have to understand. He's not saying, even in his understanding of Rashi, that it's not important to know these stories. He's not questioning the existence of Navi. We know. We need to know stories, and we can learn Ma'aseh Avos and Labanim from David HaMelech too. He's saying they shouldn't be so important, elevated to the point that they're in the Torah, even before we get to the first mitzvah, because that confuses everything. The purpose of the Torah is mitzvos. That's his assumption. That's, again, as according to Sefer Chama, that's his assumption.
But some stories are necessary, because some of the mitzvahs is definitely Yetzias Mitzrayim.
Oh, okay, good. So you're already getting an answer, right? That's an answer.
Yeah.
I'm not ready for answers.
Oh.
You've heard some of my drushes. The key to life is the questions, not the answers. We need to know the question. What is Rashi's question, says Chachamim? It's an assumption that the purpose of the Torah is mitzvos. Well, what do we need all these stories for? Now, if he's right about his assumption, then it's a good question. If we would reject the assumption, we'd have a better answer. But that's the question. Now, I have a second source for you, a second approach. Much, much more contemporary. There is a state fair, a classic. It's published in 2 volumes in Hebrew, and I think years ago Art Scroll published it in 5 volumes in English, more or less a translation, called Hegot, Parshiot HaTorah. It's a modern book written in the later, mid to late 20th century in Eretz Israel, by a person whose Hebraicized Israeli name is Yehuda Nachshoni Zatzal. It's known in the base medrash as just the Nachshoni. But the official title of the book was not after his name. Certain schools get known by their last name, right? Certain schools, Sharpman, Provenders, you know, the schools get names. Schlangers, they get names. But that's not the real name. Every one of these places have real names. So his sefer is known as Nachshoni, but it's got a real name. The real name is Hegos B'Parshas HaTorah. Thoughts, essays on the Parsha. So Nachshoni, in his first essay of this monumental work, Rav Zsolti Zatzal, for those who want, again, the merging of Tarsha, was one of the Rav of Yerushalayim, one of the great Iluyim, the great Talmidim, was one of the big, big Iluyim of Yeshivas Chevron, major, major Rav. So he gave a haskama to the book. He writes that it's a Shita Mukubetzis on Tarsha Shevichsav. It's a collection of a massive amount of material he digests. And the truth is, it's a very helpful sefer because he collects a lot of things. But every now and then, he gives you his own original idea. He actually has one here. And he makes the following suggestion. Ulam, achrei hisbonerus efshar lomar. After some thought, we could give a different explanation. Ki chazal b'sheilosam. You see, he assumes it's chazal. He assumes it's an earlier source, not Rashi's father. He assumes that it's an earlier medrash as the source. What are they asking? hitkavnu lo leparsha chodes kemitzvah tziburis rishona. Not like Sifrei Chachamim, for example, holds that the reason it was Chodesh Zalachem, and that's the first national mitzvah as opposed to Bris Milah or something like that. It's not focusing. Don't. That's a red herring. It's distraction. Don't focus on Kiddush HaChodesh per se. Ella, rather, Leparshas Yetzias Mitzrayim Chalusa. In the more general, vague, in the general sense, where is the Parsha of Chodesh Zalachem in the middle of? It's in the middle of the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Shemakoma b'Torah u'b'machsheves Yisrael Meromam v'ne'elam Ar Parshas B'yasa Olam. And what is the assumption? That from the hashkafic perspective, we're ditching mitzvot, that's the Sifrei Chachamim. Says Achshoni, no, it is a hashkafic point. But the point is, there's more important things for our hashkafa, for our belief, than knowing that God created the world. What's more important? Knowing that Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim, specifically in the manner that He did. And He proves it by pointing out, it's not just He who's suggesting it, or this Rashi that He thinks is hinting at it. He says, no, we have a track record in Rishonim, for example, that tell us that Yetzias Mitzrayim is more central to our hashkafa than God creating the world. So he gives a number of sources to illustrate the point. I'll just share with you one, and I picked this one in particular because it's not even clear how to understand it, and there's two different perspectives on it, each of which may be right, but each of which certainly are important to know. The Kuzari, Rav Yehuda Halevi, the great lover of Eretz Yisrael, or the Chachmei Sfarad. So he wrote his famous theological book. It's an imaginative disputation where there's this Chacham who's representing Judaism, and he's discussing with members of other religions, with this king who's looking to convert, and what religion should he convert to. So there's essentially somebody standing in for Christianity, somebody for Islam, and the Chacham, as he's known in the book, who's standing in representing Judaism. So one of the comments that the Chacham makes is the following. That is a typo. I see. I typed in there. There should be a hey there in that first word. That's L-O-K. That's a God's name. Typed in a race by accident. He points out the following. The Melech, Kuzar, asks him, why is it that in those first Aseres HaDibros, when it talks about I am God, it doesn't say who created Shemayim V'aretz. It says, I am God who took you out of Egypt. Isn't that a funny way of identifying God? Isn't it more powerful, more awesome to say God created the world? Okay. So that may be one of the things that we'll see. So what is the Kuzari answer to that question? So Ethan, you may be on the mark. We'll see. So he points out Yudalevi admits that of course you're right. It doesn't start off with God creating Shemayim Aretz. It doesn't talk about that. Rather, Patach Devarav El Yisrael. It's speaking more personally, as Ethan was suggesting, to the Jewish people. Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Yotzeicha, etc. And therefore, it continues with Mash Ani Chayavbo Kol Adas Bnei Yisrael, all the things that we're obliged to Hashem for. Asher Hit Barer Eitzel Hamamet Hazeh Biraos Einehem. And how did we get this relationship with Hashem, where we became obligated to Him? Because He freed us in a way that we all saw, and therefore, it's more consequential to our lives than the fact that He just created the world. If He just created the world, we could all be Gentiles. So the truth is, the two parts of this that I underlined, I specifically underlined those two phrases, because they really are speaking about different points. And books like the Kuzari, similar to like a Rashi al Torah, are so impactful that over the years, many people have written Perushim on the Kuzari. So two of the different Perushim that I saw, the Nachshoni quotes, have different takes on what the Kuzari meant. And they each hang their hat, so to speak, on these two phrases. The first parish, along with Ethan, focus on the fact that why is Yetzias Mitzrayim more important to Hashkafas HaTorah? Because it's a personal relationship that we have with. We could just be one of a few billion people, or we could be the Am HaNivchar, the chosen people. What made that difference? Not the creation of the world. What made that difference is Yetzias Mitzrayim, and therefore it's more consequential to focus on Yetzias Mitzrayim. Stepping back to our Medrash, the first Rashi, why start the Torah with Bereishis Bara? What's that got to do with us, the Jewish people? It's nice to know, but the purpose of the Torah is about the special relationship that Am Yisrael has with Hashem. So where does that begin? The story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Alternatively, what the Kuzari may have in mind is not so much that first point, but the second point, which is, what's more important as a proof for God? creation? Who saw that? You know anyone who saw creation? Who could tell you about it? There was no one alive. But Yetzias Mitzrayim, which was done in front of millions of people, and not only millions of Jews, even more millions of Egyptians. So, if you will, if we were in an Eish HaTorah seminar, what's the more powerful, compelling proof? Yetzias Mitzrayim. Now, those who are familiar may know that this relates to another point in Kuzari. He's of the belief, use that word, no pun intended in a sense, that the source of belief, this is what's known, I say this not jokingly, in Eish HaTorah they have different things where they try to prove God and the chosen to the Jewish people. So one of those is a theological belief and a disbelief proof and one proof, and this is known as the historical proof. The historical proof is the Kuzari proof. And he points out that as opposed to, let's say, Christianity, whatever great miracles took place, happened in front of nobody, in front of four people, in front of 12 people, whatever, this happened in front of millions and millions of people. And there's no way he assumes that that could ever, a story like that could have been fabricated. If you want to make a lie, you want to leave out as many details as possible and surely leave yourself with very few people who could contradict your lie. So the fact that the Torah said that it didn't just happen, it happened in front of millions of people, so what? That first generation, when they said it didn't happen, what are you talking about? Pirates let us out. And the fact that that story has been passed on generation to generation with no one contradicting it, that's the Kuzari. I don't want to here digress into whether it's a good proof, it's a bad proof, modern philosophy, how it... But it's a very big idea in the Kuzari's thought. This idea that everyone saw Yetzias Mitzrayim. One way or another, though, the Nachshoni quotes Kuzari as saying that's what Rashi had in mind. Don't start with Bereishis Bara. Start with HaChodesh Zelachem. But not like we first said, because mitzvot are more important than stories and hashkafa. No, it's hashkafa and hashkafa. But not all hashkafa was created equally. The hashkafa, the idea that Yetzias Mitzrayim Hashem chose us, that we saw it, that's a more awesome proof of God, a more awesome point towards our relationship with God, than merely the fact that God created the world. Of course, merely there being in quotes. If you want to ask supernaturally what expresses more power, perhaps everyone would agree that that's to create the world. But Nachshoni says that's not, Rashi's trying to say, that's not the point. We're not writing a book about power of God, we're trying to write a book that's important to the Jewish people. Our guidebook for life. And we should start off with a hashkafa. Yetzias Mitzrayim made more sense. That's another approach. You know, we still don't have any answers. This is another approach to what's Rashi's question. And finally, perhaps the most famous source on this question, other than Rashi himself, is this is the first comment of the legendary Ramban. Ramban, who wrote many things, but perhaps most famously his commentary on the Torah. The first Ramban al HaTorah addresses the first Rashi al HaTorah. And there's a running theme that more often than not, Ramban is questioning Rashi. So Rashi's whole thing is, why do we start with a Chodesh Zelachem? And then he gives an answer. Says the Ramban, last source on the first sheet. V'yesh lish olba. Ki tzarach gadol hu l'hachil HaTorah b'vreshes bara. This is like Harry was asking before. What kind of, anyone bother all the years you've known about this Rashi and say, what is Rashi talking about? That's a question? Of course there's a need to start with Bereishis Bara. How could he have thought that there wouldn't be? Turn over. Ki hu shorash emunah. This is the basis of all faith. V'she'enu ma'amin b'zeh v'choshev she'olam kadma. Someone who doesn't believe that God created the world. Someone who thinks that the world just existed for eternity, which was, you know, a famous the Greek belief. Hu kofer b'ikr v'en lo torah klal. He's an apikoros. He's a heretic. So before you can get started, what's the aleph base of knowing about life? Again, from a religious perspective, is to know that God created the world. Says the Ramban, of course that's what you start with. Right? The title of the shir is Why Begin in the Beginning? That's Rashi's question. The Ramban says it's obvious why you would begin in the beginning. Because where else would you begin? But in the beginning. So that's three perspectives now. Now, I take it back, I'm sorry. So, if that's the question, so now we have, until now I've been giving you two explanations of what Rashi's question is. Now I'm making things more complicated for you. Now I'm asking you a question on Rashi's question. So in order to get our third perspective about Rashi's question, we have to see the Ramban's answer. But again, don't be confused. This is not the answer to Rashi's question. This is an answer to defend Rashi's question. Hope that's clear. If not, it will be soon, I hope. What's the answer? Hachuva. For the sake of time, I'm just going to paraphrase this. Basically, what he says is very simple. It's so simple because it's so complicated. Namely, he says, come on, who are you kidding? You think that if you read this account in the first and second chapter of Bereishis, 6 days, this, that, God, anyone want to know what the Rakia is? Who knows what the Rakia is? Even after we'll have a shiur on this in 2 months, you're still not going to know. do we really understand what happened? Cosmic soup, Big Bang. We have no way of knowing, says the Ramban. This is a nice story, but do you think we even have a tipa shebayam, a drop in the bucket, to understand what actually was going on? Of course not. This is the mystery of the whole world. It's not encapsulated in a book that first graders learn. You kidding me? And on the contrary, furthermore, he says, and he quotes it, he paraphrases it, it's a Gemara in Chagiga, that says that there are certain special people who know these super-duper esoteric metaphysical Kabbalistic secrets, and they're not allowed to share it. What's known is, quote, in quotes, the Gemara calls Maase Bereishis, is not allowed to be taught in public. Now, what's clear is that that's obviously not referring to the simple meaning of these words, since every first or second grader in day schools throughout the world are learning those. What do you see from that Gemara? It's obvious that there was a lot more to the creation story than was just in those psukim. The Gemara is not allowed to teach it in public. We're teaching it to every child in school. Says the Ramban, so first of all, you read the psukim, you don't even know what's going on. And if you'll be one of those people who will know what's going on, you can't even teach it to anybody. So something so confusing and so esoteric and so elitist, that was Rashi's question, why start with that? It's confusing, it's like, well, you don't get anywhere with that. That's tachos, that's meat, now we can really dig in. But the creation of the world? Who knows? That's Ramban's understanding of the question of Rashi.
Well, that's a question you wouldn't...
What about the stories of Avraham? Good question. Although he writes that Noah also has, obviously the flood is, there's some mysteries about the flood also. It's a good point. That's a good point. Listen, the bottom line is when we think about, he doesn't say this, I'm just on my own saying, there's obviously a lot we don't understand about that time of the world either. You know, we speak about people living for 900 years and stuff. I mean, this is stuff, to this very day, we're not sure. Literally, it's metaphoric. There's mysteries there too, but I'll grant you, you're right. His main point, again, you take a look inside, I'm just paraphrasing it now for you, I'm summarizing it, but his main point is that the story of Bereishis is too confusing. It's too mysterious, so what's the point of putting it in? Certainly, what's the point of starting with it? Three different approaches to the question. Right? That's a lot deeper than we usually get when we're just reading Chumash and Rashi on a typical Parshas Bereishis, especially if it was a three-day Yontif after Simchas Torah. We're still woozy, we're hungover from Yontif. We don't always treat it with this seriousness. Three different understandings of what this question is. So now we need answers. Now I'm ready to give you some answers. Or at least possible answers. So those are all good questions. So what were the words of Rashi? The words of Rashi were, essentially, that we need to have these stories teach us that God owns the world, God created the world, and if God did that, it's with righteousness and honesty and justice and fairness that we can have Eretz Yisrael, because even though we all admit people lived there before us, but God gave it to them, and since He owns it, He can always take it back and give it to us. I think anyone disagree? That's a simple reading of Rashi's answer. But the question is, we need to get past the simple reading. We need to have a deeper understanding. Now that we have deeper understandings of the question, what are the possibilities for answers? So one is the Ramban himself. The Ramban himself continues and gives an answer. And the answer is not much more than Rashi himself says. He just elaborates on it a little bit. And then I want to give an elaboration on the Ramban, which will tie into something that Gene asked before. So then he quotes the answer. But Nosson Rabbi Yitzchak Tamlazer. Rabbi Yitzchak gave an answer to this. Ki etchila ha-Torah be-Bereishis bara Elokim. We got the whole creation story. And we got all these details about everything that was going on there. And we have Gan Eden and Adam living there until third line. He's Giresh Osoch et Omisham. Because he sinned, he gets kicked out of Gan Eden. And then we have the Mabel, the flood, which has to do with sin again. And people are kicked out. And then the descendants of him, that's the Dor HaFlaga, they try to do other things, and they get destroyed, and they get spread out. What's the constant theme that you see in these stories? Second paragraph, underlined. Im Kein Royhu, Kesher Yosef HaGoy Lachto. What do we see here? We see a theme of reward and punishment. Behavior has consequences. Look at Adam, he got in trouble, he lost his land. Noach and the world, they lost their land. Dor HaFlaga, they lost their land. And therefore, it's totally appropriate. Kasher Yosef HaGoy Lachto, when these nations of the world continue to sin, that they're also going to lose their land. But Russia says Arzo, and another nation will come in and inherit their land. Because that was always the pattern of history from the beginning of creation. And therefore, again, I paraphrase a little bit here. I didn't include all of the Ramban. It's a very lengthy piece. We have many indications, and Chazal especially, that the nations of the world, the Sheva Amimim of Canaan, they were terribly immoral and terribly sinful. And therefore, no problem for God to kick them out. It's not like you just get when you just read the Rashi. Listen, I gave it, I can take it away. You know, one day, these guys are living nicely, moral, wonderful lives, you know, taking their kids to school, maybe biking in the park in the afternoon, and rooting for the Yankees, and all sorts of other wonderful things that you would expect of a higher civilized class. That's not what was happening. And then all of a sudden Hashem said, guess what? Sorry, guys, I'm kicking you out and giving it to the Jewish people. That would be a little bit unfair, wouldn't it? That's not what happens, says the Ramban. They should have known better. There's a pattern in history. When you sin, you lose your rights to your land. You get kicked out. And therefore, just like the previous examples, Anshei Canaan, these nations, they were terribly immoral, lived very sinful lives, and therefore, they were being kicked out with no gripes, because it happened so many times beforehand. Furthermore, and then we're then told, he continues and finishes, Shiedu ki ba'avodoso yachiluha, that then when the Jewish people, and it's not just a lesson for the Goyim, we have to keep up with the standards ourselves. So what do we know? Now that Hashem kicked them out and put us in the land, what's the lesson for us? That if we're being put in the land, im yachdu lo takiyosam aretz, the land will throw us out. Just like it happened to the nations before us, it'll happen to us. It's not a preference of us over them per se. I mean, obviously there's some notion of chosenness. The Ramban Chas HaShalom is not denying that in the general sense. But in the specific sense of connecting the chosen people to the chosen land, says the Ramban, on the one hand there's a certain preference to us, but on the other hand there's certain, if you will, metaphysical rules to the way God embedded in creation. And if you sin, you get kicked out of your land. It's especially true in Eretz Yisrael. And if it could happen to the nations of Canaan, it could just as easily happen to us. And of course, it has happened twice in history, and we hope it won't happen to Chas HaShalom a third time, now that we have at least partially returned. But it could happen. Of course it could happen. If we sin, we'll get kicked out, just like the Goyim had gotten kicked out. So what you see from this is a focus on, if you will, the theological or justification, what's the righteousness, so to speak, of our getting Eretz Yisrael. I want to point out a very beautiful Sefer. I'd seen it, but the truth is, what really was the impetus to buy it was that Rabbi Weinreb, 2+ years ago, recommended it to me. It's a multi-volume set on Chumash, known as the Sum Derech, which is a collection of Chumash Shiurim given by Rav Simcha Zissel Broidy, who was Atzal, who was one of the premier Rosh Yeshivas at the Hebron Yeshiva in Yerushalayim. He specifically gave Chumash Shurim focused on Ramban HaLaTorah, so I figured this is Mustama, he spoke on this Ramban and this Rashi, and he has an essay in the back of that Sefer where he discusses this Ramban. And he points out something that always bothered me in general about Rashi. You know, we're going to carry around our Chumash as a ticket that Eretz Yisrael is ours? Well, if they don't believe in the Chumash, what good does it do? You see this playing out through our very eyes. Again, I don't want to digress at all, and these are complicated topics. But the bottom line is, you look around the world, certainly in the Western world, those who believe in the literal interpretation of the Bible have no problem with Israel. It's your land. More often than not, and I'm being simplistic, I know that, but there's an overwhelming correspondence between those who are more energetically anti-Israel and their secularist beliefs, whether it's Europe or in certain parts of the American elite. Those who are ma'minim b'nei ma'minim, if you will, so the Torah gave you the land to that. Now they believe that the Torah is eventually going to do something for them too. Okay, that's a different story. I'm not talking about that. But you see from this very point, how is this going to prove anything? If you believe in the Torah and that Hashem created the world, okay, but then you're halfway Jewish already. I mean, like, who are these people that we're going to somehow convince? This has always bothered me.
Even
the Rashi's
talking,
we think it's going to be. Exactly, well, right. So what does the Simchas Broidy say? Something so beautiful. Again, I have to say, the same Drasha that I once spoke about, this Rashi, I also said this pshat before I ever saw it in here. So Barashi Kibanti says something so beautiful, more powerfully than I could have ever said it myself. What do you see from here, says Rabbi Broidy? Don't read it superficially. It doesn't mean that you're going to hand this ticket over to the non-Jewish people and say, okay, you're right. Halavai. Rather, Ela Hachuva Loada La'atzmenu. Sheneida Sh'artisra Nitna Lanu. Yoshua said it. The Jewish people need to know that our claim to the land of Israel is righteous and honorable. they shouldn't think that we somehow stole it. And he continues, this is a part of a larger essay which speaks about the role of all of Sefer Bereishis trying to impact on the people who read it, the Jewish people, Yashrus, being a mensch. He says here, if you would think, if you're a Jew and you're reading the Torah, and you think that somehow our chosen lands we stole, so you can't live with such a philosophy but be a mensch. That's a corrupting philosophy. And it's not just going to be a corrupting philosophy vis-a-vis Eretz Yisrael. That will corrupt you to your core, he says. So therefore, you need to know, the Jewish people need to know, that it's an honest deal. If it'll convince some going wonderful. It won't convince most. So then that's what we have an army for, and we daven. But the main thing is us, and let's be honest, it's tragic. But how many Jews do we know who could use a little dose of this? Not just a little dose. Right, this group that I'm referring to, whether it's in America or Europe, is disproportionately Jewish. It's a nebuch. There's nothing more painful than a Jew who doesn't even realize our claim to the land. And that's what the Ramban understands the beginning of the Torah is trying to educate us to. It doesn't always work. Nebuch people sometimes even go through day school and don't get the message. But that's the purpose. That's one, again, that's a deeper understanding of Rashi's question now and his answer. Now I want to conclude last few minutes of the shiur with the second approach. We have three approaches to the question. We're really only going to have two approaches to the answer. The second approach to the answer is based on an assumption that the question is really focusing on the mitzvos versus hashkafa debate. What's the purpose of the Torah? What's the purpose of life? Having the good beliefs, correct beliefs, living like a nice guy, or really living a life of Torah and mitzvos. So we saw from the Sifsei Chachamim that that's how he understood the question. Why start with all the stories? Stories are the four spice. We want the main dish, and the main dish is mitzvos. HaChodesh is Alachem. So the truth is, someone who also asked the question in that way is the Maharal. Maharal also wrote a commentary on the Torah, which is not a commentary on the Torah. It's our third time we'll say the word today. It's a super commentary on Rashi. Maharal's commentary called the Gur Aryeh is really not a commentary on the Torah, it's a commentary on Rashi of the Torah. So the Maharal and his Gur Aryeh, when he's paraphrasing the question, Ma'inyan nisinas ha'aretz li'Yisrael, eitzel mitzvah ha'Torah, shekosu zeh ba'Torah. Who cares? The answer is, Rabbi Yitzchok says, oh, so we'll know about Israel. Go put that in Novi, you go teach it in a Jewish history class, you'll teach it in a Hashkafa class. What's that got to do with Torah? Torah is about mitzvos. That's the question. We saw the same assumption by Sifsei Chachamim. So one answer might be, no, you're wrong. This is what that drasha I gave all those years ago was. You see from here, there's something more in Judaism. As important as mitzvos are, it's not the whole story. There's Hashkafa, there's Jewish history, there's culture, there's lots of things to make up Judaism. Maybe mitzvos are the most important thing, but they're not the only thing. That's one answer, and that seems to be the deeper understanding of the Ramban, or even the Rashi himself. But the Maharal in the Gur Aryeh gives a different answer. He says, true, you're right, it's not about the centrality of Eretz Yisrael, it's not about the centrality of Yetzias Mitzrayim versus Maaseh Bereishis, like we saw from Nachshoni. Those are all different philosophies. Rather, what does the Maharal say? Ein zekusha. Nesha rov mitzvos, tluyos ba'aretz. Don't create this fake bifurcation. Is it Eretz Yisrael focused and Hashkafa, or is it mitzvah focused? Says the Maharal, it's not a question because the whole assumption is flawed. There's a synergy between Eretz Yisrael and the life of mitzvos. Because most, again, if you want to translate the word most, or you want to talk about it many, but he uses the word rov, mitzvos are connected, if not entirely dependent, on Eretz Yisrael. So then he starts off giving you the ones that are literally dependent. Truma and Maestros and everything relating to the Beis Hamikdash and Karbonos. Im ein ha'aretz li'Yisrael, lo yitchanu eila mitzvos klal. Then it's not even conceivable to have those mitzvos. Certain mitzvos are so connected to Israel that if there's no Israel, there's no mitzvos. And even to this very day, we know we don't have those mitzvos, at least not on an ideal d'oraisa plane, because we don't have full Kedusha in Eretz Yisrael, we don't have a Beis Hamikdash. Without Eretz Yisrael, you wouldn't have all those mitzvos. And more than that, he points out another comment of the Ramban, a very, very famous, controversial comment that the Ramban makes. Again, halavai, one day in this Chumash year we'll get to it. It isn't Sefer Bereishis, but it'll be far away from here. The Ramban says the following. The Ramban has an idea. I have it here, third line from the in the source. Kol ha-mitzvos he-sheichos tafkor. It's all mitzvos. Lighting Shabbos candles and putting on tefillin, bris milah. All mitzvos, Shabbos, their holidays, they're all really only mitzvos in the 100% of the word, if you're living in Eretz Yisrael. So he'll say, great, I'm going home, and I'm eating a cheeseburger. No, says Ramban, you have to keep the mitzvos in the diaspora, so that when you live in Eretz Yisrael, you're not starting from scratch, you know what you're doing. You can't knock into Eretz Yisrael a rookie, because then you'll be blasted, you'll be doing sins all over the place. You can't learn on the job when it comes to this. So we're practicing in Chutz Laaretz, so when we get to Eretz Yisrael, we'll really know what we're doing. That's an astounding comment, but the Ramban makes it al haTorah. So not everyone likes it. People say, you don't really, that's not what he means. He's just exaggerating. That's for another topic. I don't want to focus on it too much, but the Maharal quotes it here. And he's bolstering his point that you see here, especially if you would accept this Ramban literally, that you can't separate Eretz Yisrael from mitzvos. Eretz Yisrael and mitzvos are connected. And therefore, what was the assumption of Rashi's question? That you, why should I start with Chodesh Selachem? Because mitzvos are all that's important. And for Rashi, what does Rabbi Yitzchak say? No. Listen, if we don't have a rightful land to Eretz Yisrael, we won't be able to do the mitzvos. And you can't imagine a life of mitzvos without Eretz Yisrael. I want to just close. I'll allow you to read it yourself. But the truth is, you really should look this up, and you can all find it on your own. Because it's a lengthy essay. I just paraphrased for you two paragraphs. But without quoting this Maharal, which is not surprising because he's not such a Maharal oriented thinker, but my Rebbe, Rav Rosenzweig, a number of years ago published an essay online. There's a website, actually run by a friend of mine named TorahWeb, where they send out weekly emails from many of the Rashi Yeshiva at YU, each week a different Rashi Yeshiva, on Parshas HaShavua, on the holidays, etc. Rav Shechter writes regularly there for Willig, others. So many, a number of years ago, Rav Rosenzweig wrote a piece on the central role of Eretz Yisrael in Torah life. And here he deals with this Rashi. He doesn't quote a Maharal, but he basically makes this point, and he even makes it even stronger, is that he assumes also that the question is, mitzvot should come first, so why are we abandoning the central role of mitzvot to give all these stories? What's the answer? And he points out that you see in many, many mitzvot, see the Maharal only quoted mitzvot like Atzilus Baretz and the Beis Hamikdash Church are literally connected to the land and the Kedusha of the land. But the truth is, he quotes, Rav Rosenzweig, in that essay, a number of other mitzvot, which presumably have nothing to do, they're not agriculturally focused. The concept of smicha, the real concept of smicha, of one leader giving it to the next. The idea of Kirsha Chodesh itself. Other examples which have nothing to do per se with Eretz Yisrael, but yet the halacha is about all those mitzvos, they can only exist, at least ideally, in Eretz Yisrael. And the running theme that Rosenzweig proves throughout all of those, that those are mitzvos that are focused on the tzibur, the Klal Yisrael mitzvos. And therefore you see the point being, he says, that Eretz Yisrael, we're only a people in the real sense of the word when we're in Eretz Yisrael. And those mitzvos, which are nationally focused, a prime example being Kiddush HaChodesh, their real home is in Eretz Yisrael, even though they impact people of the diaspora as well. But their home is intricately connected to Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, he basically makes the same broad idea, allow you to read it to yourself, you can go online and read it fully. But again, he's basically saying the same thing as the Maharal. Really, one of the first things I'm going to hope to do tonight is to call him, tell him about the Maharal, because I don't know if he would know about this. He's not a Maharal person. But it's the same idea. With Machav, it's the same idea. He just expands it. You can't separate Eretz Yisrael and mitzvos, that a very prime and central core and root of all mitzvos, the whole life of mitzvos, is our connection to Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, we weren't abandoning the assumption the Torah was saying, according to this approach, that we can't start from a Chodesh Zelachem, because then we wouldn't only know half the story about mitzvos. You can't think about mitzvos if you don't know about Eretz Yisrael. How do you know about Eretz Yisrael? That we have a rightful claim to Eretz Yisrael. So that's Kos Ma'asav Higid. Okay, thank you everyone for coming. Baruch Hashem, we will see you next week, and we'll begin now with some further comments in the creation story.